Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to Romance of the Two Networks. Just as things seem like they're going to stabilize, the networks must divide again. I'm Six Datmar from Scanline Media.
I'm Jennifer Uncle from Scanline Media.
And I'm M, holding it down for Admiral Mapping.
Pour one out for Jackson. Hosting was just too much. No, just scheduling conflicts.
Yes. You know. Listen, Jackson's doing a much worse book right now as we speak. So.
Oh, God, yeah. Because this book fucking kicked ass this week.
Every week, really, but yes.
I mean, there are some weeks where it's like, okay, this, you know, the battle rages, sure. But, and, you know, battles certainly raged this week, but they were some sick-ass battles.
Yeah.
I really want to play in a video game soon. Because this is fucking great. We have chapters 49, 50, and 51. And I'll just get a ride, you know, unless... Has there been any big Three Kingdoms news? Has Luo Guanzhong had any tweets since we last...
Tweet check. No, sadly not.
Oh, damn. Wow. Bummer.
I do know that Romance of the Three Kingdoms, they recently released a brand new one of those, and I think it's only in Japanese right now, and also it's getting hammered pretty hard on Steam reviews. People are not a big fan of the new one, so...
Yeah, 14 just came out. It is westbound later this year. Also just came out... is the Mandate of Heaven update for Total War Three Kingdoms, which allows you to start at the beginning of the Yellow Turban Rebellion and just play through the whole thing for $10, which sounds great. And also, you can get the guy whose name I can never remember, Tao Qian, for free right now. Just download him.
Oh, neat.
He's the guy who Cao Cao swore revenge against because of his dad.
Ah.
And who in Dynasty Warriors has a city defended by 60-foot-tall dragon statues that breathe fire for some reason.
Oh, very true to the book.
Yeah, you know. But we'll get ahead into our summaries so we can talk about what we've read this week, because it rules. Chapter 49, on Seven Star Altar, Kong Ming supplicates the wind. At Three Rivers, Zhou Yu unleashes the fire. Kong Ming goes to see the bedridden Zhou Yu and correctly interprets his ailment. He is panic-stricken at realizing they will not have the wind they need for their firebase scheme. Kong Ming convinces Zhou Yu to build an altar so that he can use occult tricks to summon a southeast wind. He succeeds, and Zhou Yu is again alarmed by his talent and sends men to kill him. However, Kong Ming anticipated this and returns to Xuanda with Xiao Zhilong. United with his lord, Kong Ming sets several ambushes for the battle to come. Meanwhile, Huang Gai makes good his fake surrender and sets fire to Cao Cao's megaship. In so doing, he is shot by an arrow. Will he survive? Read on.
I love how extra Kong Ming is at all times. Like, when he visits Cao Yu, he says that, oh, I have a prescription for you, and details his plan in... Well, he details what he thinks is wrong in a little note that he shows Zhou Yu, which is basically like, oh, wind's not doing so great for your plan, huh? And, yeah, the description of the altar that he sets up is so extra. Like, there's at least 100 bannermen on the various floors of this altar, and every once in a while he comes up to it and does a prayer and then retires for a set period of time until he comes back out again.
Yeah, I really like the scene with Zhou Yu and Kong Min talking about the problem. I do really like that he writes his diagnosis as a poem, first of all.
Also, it's worth pointing out, Zhou Yu's problem is that he thinks he's going to lose, so he faked vomiting blood.
Yeah, and he's going to do this again.
Yes.
Later in these chapters. He apparently has the ability to vomit blood on command.
He's like worried. A snake. Snakes do this if they're too stressed.
I wonder what year he was born. But, like, I really like this scene because it's a really... So, Zhou Yu and Kong Min are just constantly... Well, I wouldn't say at each other's throats. Zhou Yu is constantly on Kong Min's throat, and Kong Min keeps going like, haha, that's cute. But there's this brief window in this scene of what it would be like if they were actually friends, and it's so good.
You get a little bit of that in, I think, the previous set of chapters where they both write down what they think should happen. It's a very teen sweetheart kind of thing where they write their prediction down and both of them have the same prediction and they just smile at each other like, oh yeah.
Remember when you and your teen sweetheart were out on Heartbreak Hill and you both wrote down fire? it's really nice because these are two people who, like, if Zhouyu wasn't, I mean, there's a level of intelligence to what he's trying to do, of trying to be like, Kongming's gonna be a problem and he didn't nip this in the bud, but there's also just a level of pettiness to him, and if he could just keep that in check, those two would be such good buds.
Totally. And his reasons for wanting to kill Kongming always change. Like, sometimes it's because he thinks he won't get the job done. Other times he does the job too well and he becomes an absolute terror in Zhouyu's mind.
Yeah, Zhouyu's like, I can't believe Kongming helped me in exactly the way he said he would. I gotta kill him. Okay, all right, Zhouyu. Cool. Also worth noting, Kongming's escape here, he lays out exactly how it's gonna go at the beginning of chapter 45. After Xuando walks up to meet Zhouyu and Zhouyu almost kills him but gets scared by Lord Guan, Kong meets up with him and is like, hey, you almost died there, as we might recall. And then he says, on the 20th day, first of the cycle of the 11th month, send Zhao Zhilong in a small boat to wait for me on the south shore. There must be no slip up. Look for a southeast wind. That's when I'll come back.
He's got a whole Light Yagami plan happening here.
He's truly thinking.
Yeah, it's all so going according to Kaku.
It extremely is. And even then we get another plan for the next set of chapters where after he's back, he's like, okay, here's the plan. We got all these ambushes. And he's like, Lord Guan, are you sure you can do this? Are you sure you can bring justice to Cao Cao? I know you feel like you owe him some favors. And Lord Guan's like, we're cool. I'll totally take care of him.
I swear on pain of death, I will take care of him.
And Xuanda's like, oh, I didn't think you'd let him. And he's like, oh, he's going to let him live. But like, don't worry. I read the stars and Cao Cao's going to live no matter what. So why not make Lord Guan feel bad about it? I wasn't here, and some people had some comments about me and my positions. I remain disappointed.
Oh, you mean your cowardly faults?
yes. Some they have been referred to as such by some people. I remain disappointed that Kongmin's arrow strategy was just get them to shoot at me because it's been done before and nobody likes a repeat.
Kongming actually loves a repeat. Every one of his plans is let's do the same thing three times and they'll fall for it each time. Because they'll be like, no one would ever do the same plan twice.
That's true. It's very much like fighting game. If I do the overhead the seventh time in a row,
his ultimate plan is literally just we're going to make Cao Cao fall into the exact same trap again and again and again next chapter here. So
okay, you're bringing me back around. Okay, that's fair. All right. But yeah, these chapters really, Kongming is just the coolest character in this book, and it's kind of ridiculous how sick he is.
The best part is he knows that everyone is going to eventually hate him. Like, he's constantly right, and he's not, like, super mad about the fact that everyone wants to kill him because he's too brilliant, but he's just aware of the fact.
Mm-hmm. He's constantly peppering in, with any advice, he always peppers in, well, I'm not exactly super smart or experienced with any of this. Like, he's playing that humble card with fingers crossed that people will just continuously hear that and be like, oh, okay, he's not aware of his own talents. He's probably okay.
Yeah. I also do like that Huang Gai's false surrender. It's not completely one-sided here. When he does the false surrender and he sails the boat over, he does get seen through. It's just a little too late to do anything about it. Where Cheng Yu is like, Cao Cao, there's no grain in those boats. He's not planning to hang out. And Sasu's like, oh shit, but by that point it's too late. But I do like that it isn't completely one-sided, because they already did get so many wins, where they got the wind, improbably, they got, they convinced the, Sasu to let Hongai, you know, get close enough to do the false surrender, they executed his spies, and they convinced him to tie all his boats together. So Sasu's gotta get a little win here, right? Irrelevant as it is.
surviving's all the wind he deserves, really, here, I feel like.
gosh, this goes real bad for everyone's best friend, Cao Cao. I don't need to lay it on thick. You know how I feel. chapter 50, Kong Ming foresees the outcome at Hua Rong. Lord Guan releases and obligates Cao Cao. Southern Commander Han Dong fishes Huang Gai out of the water and stabilizes him. The fire and battle both rage, taking a heavy toll of Cao Cao's forces. Cao Cao retreats to the Black Forest, but is ambushed by Xiao Xilong. Cao Cao flees to Yiling, but is again ambushed, this time by Zhang Fei. He flees again, and finally he can flee no more when Lord Guan ambushes him on the road to Jiangling. However, Cao Cao pleads mercy based on their past relationship, and Lord Guan feels honor-bound to let him pass. Lord Guan meets back up with Xuanda's forces, and Kong Ming congratulates him on defeating Cao Cao. Lord Guan confesses that he let Cao Cao go and submits for capital punishment. Is this the end for Lord Guan? Read on. Of course not.
The thing here is, now that we're back with Xuanda and the boys, it very much feels like we took like this OVA season that's like a spinoff, just hanging out in the South, and now Kong Ming is back with all the main characters. It's very disconcerting. Mm-hmm. Not in a bad way, it's just weird to see them all and feel like disconnected from them, because we've just been following someone else for a while. It's nice. I like it.
Kong Ming opened up the watch, and he touched the piece of paper that is the Death Note, and he's got all his memories back.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly right.
there's so much that I really like in this chapter. I mean, obviously, just the most obvious one, which is three times Cao Cao gets, like, pushed into a corner and then laughs and says, like, man, these guys ain't shit. If a really good strategist would have an ambush here, and then is immediately ambushed.
And increasingly he does this when his men are, like, bleeding and rained on and starving and just, like, everyone is having the worst experience of their lives, and here he is in the middle of all of them laughing at fate, just tempting. It's amazing they didn't stab him, honestly.
They even comment on it after the first time, like, every time you do this, someone comes and ambushes us. Would you please stop?
I feel like he's trying in a way to be, like, to do, like, the, like boisterous in the face of, like, of you know, of the bleak and be like, no, listen, I can laugh about this, so clearly we're okay. It is extremely, extremely backfiring. And the fourth time, after he gets past Lord Guan, he's walking and he just sees a bunch of torches light, and he's just like, oh, Jesus Christ, we're so dead. And it's his own men. And you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, God. I'm starting to wonder if he's like starting to develop a phobia of fire, because he's been, forgive me, burned so many times, including like way back when, back in like chapter 12, the closest Cao Cao ever came to being killed was when he got he tried to like take down Lu Bu, and the city was burnt around him, and he threw off his clothes and put on a normal soldier's uniform and pretended to be a normal guy and talked to Lu Bu, being like, yeah, I don't know where Cao Cao is. He's had some bad fire times.
Yeah.
Also, it really should be, it cannot be understated how badly the men are treated in this chapter. Like, at some point when they're making their way to the final ambush point, Cao Cao is essentially cutting down stragglers, and at some point the road that they're passing through, because it's a treacherous road, is practically paved with the bodies of his dead men. And everyone else who happens to be alive is starving, and all of their armor is in disarray. Like, it's a real bad scene out there.
Yeah, they're having to eat their horses. It's a bad time. And yeah, I mean, Lord Guan could have knocked them over with a stiff breeze, honestly. I do also like, I mean, this is a thing that's shown up throughout the book, but I feel like it's one of the best examples of it, is how the way we're sort of told how the battle is going is just by, like, you know, back before all the ambushes happen, is just by various people announcing their presence. It's sort of like Ling Tong goes, Ling Tong is here! And you're like, oh, okay, so the Southland's winning. And then Shu Huang goes, I am here! And it's like, oh, okay, now it's going back in the North's favor. It feels very... I don't know, it's a very like satisfying, like dramatic abstraction of how the battle like flows and shifts.
Totally. Anytime a named person steps out there and announces themselves or gets announced by the book, you know shit's about to go down.
But just in general, I mean, just Cao Cao looking like a real clown here, Kong Min just taking away the only thing he had, which was that set. Also, the other thing he notes is that he's really hurting for the lack of Guo Jia, who died, I don't know, like 10 chapters ago or something. Yeah. Who was the smart one of his advisors. And he's just like, God, I really... Because how long has it been now since we've had an advisor like walk up to Cao Cao and be like, here's an idea, Cao Cao, and Cao Cao gets really excited. We haven't had that in a while because he's running out of good advisors.
Yeah, he killed them all. So,
well, sure. I guess there's that. Bad times for the would-be ruler of China.
If he didn't kill them all, they are the people who are trying to kill him actively at this moment. So,
yeah. And this brings us to chapter 51. Cao Ren battles the Southland troops. Kong Ming spoils Shouyu's victory. Xuanda begs Kong Ming to pardon Lord Guan, and Kong Ming does so. In the wake of their victory, Shouyu and Kong Ming both realize that their interests are about to clash over Nanjun. Kong Ming tricks Shouyu into giving Xuanda permission to take over Nanjun if Sun Quan fails to. After several engagements, Shouyu almost seizes Nanjun, but in the fighting he is struck by a poisoned arrow and the battle turns against the south, forcing them out of the city. Shouyu fakes his own death to trick Cao Ren's forces into overextending. They do so, and finally Cao's forces in Nanjun are defeated. Victorious, Shouyu heads to occupy his prize of Nanjun, but it has already been occupied by Xuanda. The conflict between Sun Quan and Liu Xuanda has taken a new turn, read on.
Finally, Xuanda, 51 chapters in, goes, man, we should really have a kingdom, like a city that we own and occupy. And Kong Ming is like, yeah, I fucking told you a year ago.
So this is a point I'm curious about, right? It seems to me like he doesn't honor their agreement.
I also feel like he doesn't honor their agreement, so...
Which is hard for me to believe, because it's just like, it's Xuanda. Xuanda, like, even in this moment, like, before this all goes down... Xuanda's like, gosh, why did you agree to this? I wish we could just have Nanjun. And Kong's like, remember when I told you to take, you know, this other place? And you were like, no, I can't. It's too honorable. And Xuanda's like, I was right. It's not honorable.
I assume that there will be justification later on. My guess is that because Cao Cao's forces abandoned it and then they didn't immediately occupy it, that it counts as like a forfeiture of the city.
I guess, but yeah.
This is definitely splitting hairs. But also, Xuanda is desperate because he's been in the middle of nowhere forever. So at some point, you just listen to Kong Ming. Kong Ming doesn't care. Kong Ming will take over whatever he needs to.
Yeah, no, if Kong Ming was running this operation, I mean, you know, I don't think he'd have the people on his side because no one fucking trusts him. But just, you'd get shit done.
Yes.
We do have, so when everything's going bad for Cao Ren and all his other, you know, his fellow commanders of the North, they're like, we have to crack open the secret plan left to us by Prime Minister Cao Cao. And they open up like this, you know, sealed envelope that says, shoot a lot of arrows.
they do the old flee the city trick and have people hiding within the city gates to let loose with arrow after arrow. And that successfully drives everyone out, and Cao Ren's men just slip back in.
Also, here we make canon, like just confirm for sure Shouyu's ability, which I'll be extremely disappointed if he doesn't have in Total War Three Kingdoms, where he rides out to fight Cao Ren and then just foams blood and falls off his horse. And they pull him back to camp, and he's like, "What are you worried about? I'm fine." It's like, what the fuck is with this guy?
It's like the pill in Snake Eater. Like, you see a little game over appear over his head, and that he secretly, when no one's looking, takes the other thing, and he's back up and running.
I think it's just force of will. I don't think he's using secret, like tooth pills.
No.
He's the kind of person who can be so convinced at what needs to happen that he can make his mouth produce foamy blood out of nowhere.
It's especially good because the action that precedes that is him storming out after people have been riding up to their camp and insulting him repeatedly, and he just goes off on them, starts screaming, and then the blood follows him. Like, it resembles him just being so angry at everything happening that he goes full anger, and there comes the blood.
I also really like how, like, so, New Jin and Sal Ren, after the arrows hit Zhou Yu, for days spent turns riding up to camp and shouting obscenities. And meanwhile, Zhou Yu's lying in bed and he's just distantly hearing people be like, "Zhou Yu's a bitch!" And he asks his commanders, like, "What's that?" And they're like, "Oh, we're just training the men!" And he's like, "Are you fucking kidding me? You are not training the men." Very funny stuff. I really am worried about this character turn for Shwanda here is my main concern coming out of this, where this, I think this is great strategy, but this doesn't feel like Shwanda to me to go along with this plan.
I think this is all going to be massaged in future chapters would be my guess. So I'm not willing to take a stand one way or another yet.
Yeah, you're probably, listen, as far as predictions from this book have gone, you have a higher hit rate than me, so I'm only
modeling myself after the Hero of the Age, Shwanda himself, so why take a stand when I can waffle until my hand is forced?
It's also worth mentioning that in response to them taking Nanjun, Zhou Yu is like, "Okay, well, we need to attack, we need to take these other two cities in the vicinity, and that'll give us the strength to come at them." And someone's like, "Yeah, but Shwanda also took those as well while we weren't looking."
And he was like, "How did that happen?" They're like, "Well, apparently we left an official there with a badge, and Kongmin just took the badge and flashed it at people and said, 'I'm in charge.' And they said, 'Okay.'"
Yeah.
Which seems like a bad system. this has been one of my favorite series of chapters in a long time. I really like, I guess this is going to have to turn into a battle between Shwanda and the Southland for a while now. Shwanda finally feels like he's in a strong position, and Cao Cao, after being just like the not even sleeping giant, sort of the like kind of distracted giant for chapters and chapters, finally seems like showing some weakness. So it seems like the dynamic is really about to get shifted up a lot.
Yeah. I mean, who knows how quickly he will bounce back from getting totally stomped here.
Sure. But it is, I don't know, it's really exciting just to have this situation where it feels like things are coming back to, like, it's been so long, and it's been a, you know, good book, obviously, but it has been so long of Shwanda being like, "Okay, I have all these plans," and then Cao Cao shows up and Shwanda says, "I have to abandon these plans." And it seems like finally the people are setting up bases. I mean, I'll never underestimate Shwanda's ability to abandon anything he's been given and wander off. But maybe we're starting to get some power bases established.
We're almost at the halfway point of this book. I would like there to be three kingdoms. I think that's a reasonable ask at this point.
I feel like it's not going to be until, I'm going to guess, and everyone knows my accuracy rate on guesses, so which is, it's not high. It's not very high. I think it's going to be a third into the second of our two books that is one book, that we're going to get the three kingdoms. I think this is going to end in a situation where it's like Cao Cao, like, I don't know, the emperor gets lost or whatever. I don't think we'll have our three kingdoms yet. mm-hmm. but I think the stage will be set.
Yeah, I'm hoping. The part where, like, I've been waiting for there to be three, I assumed that there would be three kingdoms way earlier than this, like, you know, dozens of chapters earlier than this, but, you know, I went into this knowing nothing about the actual era of Three Kingdoms.
Yeah, I went into this knowing the names of the Three Kingdoms.
I mean,
the names don't necessarily tell, but it's sort of like, those names haven't been brought up at all. That's probably going to be a while. But also, maybe, I don't know, it could easily be, like, next chapter, Shwanda's like, and I name this area blank. And I'm like, oh, okay, here we are. I guess this is it.
But, all I knew going in was Cao Cao and Do Not Pursue Lu Bu. And that guy's been dead for a long time now.
Yeah, that is still one of my biggest surprises, is how, like, Lu Bu didn't actually matter at all, huh?
He did. He played a big part in setting things up where they are now, but he's long gone before we're even getting to anything that resembles Three Kingdoms.
I feel to be clear, I thought he was a really fun character. I like Lu Bu a lot, but I feel like, at least in terms of the grand history here, if Lu Bu hadn't been present, we'd still be where we are.
I mean, yeah, he's insignificant, really.
Yeah.
His horse is more important than he is.
It's a good horse.
It's a good horse, but also, like, for being, like, the meme that I knew about Three Kingdoms, it's ridiculous how little he mattered.
I wonder how much it is, like, people just, like, whether, like, the, like Dynasty Warriors, like,
oh yeah, I know that's what it is.
Earlier parts,
yeah.
Well, I'm sure, but I mean, like, I wonder how much, like, narratively Dynasty Warriors reflects the books, or if it's like in Dynasty Warriors, it's like, oh no, everyone knows Lu Bu, he's super important, or if it's a case where Dynasty Warriors games are so fucking long that people just saw Lu Bu content and then didn't finish the game.
When I think of Do Not Pursue Lu Bu, I think of, like, Giant Bomb, and Jeff Gerstmann's not playing 60 hours of Three Kingdoms, right?
sure.
You play the first couple missions, you see Lu Bu, you're like, oh, you shouldn't pursue that guy, you'll get stomped, and that's the thing.
Jeff Gerstmann and Vinny Caravella about to do a quick look of a new DLC for Sleeping Dogs, and they're like, what should we do, when they both write on their hands and show each other and it says fire.
The Battle of Red Cliffs is the first name that I recognize from the first name of an actual legit battle I recognize from a Dynasty Warriors game I've played in the past.
Yeah, is this, like, what the like Red Cliff John Woo movie's about? I assume it is. I didn't look this. Let me look this up. Yeah, it sure is. This is about this. There is a full ass 2-part, 4-hour movie about this that John Woo made in 2008 called Red Cliff.
That sounds great. I should watch that.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting how much stuff, like, I realized that I had heard of as we go through this. It's good.
Oh, weird. Okay, so I'm looking at this. So first off, at the beginning of this thing, first sentence of the plot sub-area, the director John Woo said in an interview, blah, 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 the film is only about 50% factual. And then I look at it and I'm like, I'm immediately seeing names who were not part of this. So that's interesting. I will happily watch it.
Yeah.
Emperor John reluctantly approves of the campaign. That's good. I'm excited for all this. I should watch this 4-hour movie.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. I'll need to check it out too.
All right. Any other closing thoughts for these three chapters here?
No, this book's good, but it's good every week. So it's hard to be like, you know, come in and be like, it's good in a very different way. No, it's just good. We picked a good book.
We really did. You know, there was a version of events where we were doing this with a different, we wouldn't say a read on at the end.
And, oh, that would be terrible. Imagine.
Right. Right. But in fact, we do. But it sounds like a transition to us saying that. But in fact, we have to do the plug zone first. M, why don't you handle your abnormal mapping plugs, please?
Yeah, you can find me and Jackson at abnormalmapping.com. We have a bunch of podcasts. You should listen to Abnormal Mapping, which is a game club. You can find that at thebestgame.club. You can listen to Repertory Screenings, which is our movie podcast we put out every 2 weeks at repertoryscreenings.com. If you'd like to support us at Patreon, patreon.com/abnormalmapping. $1 gets you Great Gundam Project, which is our famous podcast about watching Gundam. And finally, we're watching Ghost of the Shell Standalone Complex, which seems like an amazing show. I'm only 2 episodes in, but positive, extremely positive on that so far. So please check that out.
Nice.
Yeah, Standalone Complex is probably one of my favorite anime shows, so I'm super excited that y'all are covering it now. Oh, should I do my plugs too, or...?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry, kind of out of it today. I'm at JBU3 on Twitter. Most of my stuff is on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. We are recording the next Novel Not New episode tomorrow, and when that's up, you'll be able to find it on readinggames.online, so we're excited for that.
Yeah, finally getting back to visual novels. You remember those?
No.
Well, you will remember.
Will I?
Probably not. If you want to find me, I'm at SixDetmar on Twitter. I'm also just hitting submit on an order for Red Cliff International version parts 1 and 2 on Blu-ray.
Yeah, you don't want the other version because they cut it in half for Western.
I know, I saw that. Yeah. So yeah, no, I bought myself a $10 Blu-ray with both parts.
Nice.
Which is great. But yeah, SixDetmar on Twitter, scanlinemedia.com, patreon.com/scanlinemedia, all the great shit. How do you plug things? I don't know. We do work.
Be enthusiastic about your shows. What are you talking about? You have a new podcast for patrons. They should check it out.
Yeah. We ran a little late this week on it coming out because shit's been happening. But obviously, by the time this comes up, it'll be long out. You'll be listening to part 2 of our game of Mars Colony, where Jen is attempting to take over a colony on Mars, and deal with its many social and political problems. It's not going well.
Yeah, I'm falling into just about every single hole that a new leader could fall into in terms of, oh, you shouldn't do this, or oh, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah. But, yeah. Until next time. Hey, Amazon thinks I should buy six packs of energy drinks called cocaine.
You know what? I don't think I've ever had cocaine. The drink. I've never had the drug either, but that's not germane to this conversation. I don't think they sell it here.
I actually picked up at the store today. I have one right over here. I haven't cracked it open yet. Coke Energy. There's just a Coke Energy drink.
Oh, cool. My thing is with the soda energy drink spinoffs is I drink Diet, and they just got around to making Game Fuel Diet. It's going to take forever for Coca-Cola. Like that Cinnamon Coke, I would like to try that. No Diet version.
Actually, Coke Zero Energy, I saw right next to it.
Good, 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 good.
Good. And also there's Cherry Coke Energy and Cherry Coke Zero Energy, I think.
Cool. So. I typically get low-carb Monsters. I think that's my energy drink of choice. They're also ubiquitous. That helps a lot.
That does help. Speaking of which, if I'm doing more promo stuff, again, by the time this will come out, the latest episode of Bottle Crow will have come out, which is one of our... So Bottle Crow is theoretically a Dota podcast, but more often than not, we call it Jackie's Chow instead because we're just talking about food. And we open with some live on-air tasting of 6 different energy drinks, and it's awful.
The thing is, when I first met both you and Jen, I think the first thing I saw that Jen had written was a review of Jolly Rancher Pop-Tarts. And so I thought that was like y'all's gimmick, like across the board, like just subjecting yourself to terrible things. It turns out that's not the case, but it was my perception for a while.
it's kind of my gimmick, and Jen constantly tries to be like, hey, take care of yourself.
Those Pop-Tarts were foul also, because I tried them.
Yeah. To be fair, I also was the one who subjected myself to all the side Danganronpa stuff, including Ultra Despair Girls, which was incredibly
you
awful.
You like Danganronpa. Like, it's not like you're doing this for laughs. It's not ironic. You just like the thing. It's fine.
True, yeah.
There's a whole world out there, and it's our job to experience it, whether we want to or not.
Oh, is that really our job? That's not my job.
No, it's not. Don't. It sounded good.
Okay.
But no, your real job... is to read on.
Read on.
Read on.